Chapter 30. Nighttime in the tropics descends with a surprising rapidity. At one moment the earth is shining with the brightness of the twilight. The next, as it were, all things are suddenly swallowed into a gulf of darkness. The particular night of which this story treats was not entirely clear. The time of year was about the approach of the rainy season, and the tepid tropical clouds added obscurity to the darkness of the sky, so that the night fell with even more startling quickness than usual. The blackness was very dense. Now and then a group of drifting stars swam out of a rift in the vapors, but the night was curiously silent, and of a velvety darkness. As the obscurity had deepened, Mainwaring had ordered lanthorns to be lighted and slung to the shrouds, and to the stays, and the faint yellow of their illumination lighted the level white of the snug little war vessel, gleaming here and there in a star-like spark upon the brass trimmings, and causing the rows of cannons to assume curiously gigantic proportions. For some reason Mainwaring was possessed by a strange, uneasy feeling. He walked restlessly up and down the deck for a time, and then, still full of anxieties for he knew not what, went into his cabin to finish writing up his log for the day. He unstrapped his cutlass and laid it up on the table, lighted his pipe at the lanthorn, and was about preparing to lay aside his coat when word was brought to him that the captain of the trading schooner was come alongside and had some private information to communicate to him. Mainwaring surmised in an instant that the trader's visit related somehow to news of Captain Scarfield, and as immediately, in the relief of something positive to face, all of his feeling of restlessness vanished like a shadow of mist. He gave orders that Captain Cooper should be immediately shown into the cabin, and in a few moments the tall, angular form of the Quaker skipper appeared in the narrow, lanthorn-lighted space. Mainwaring at once saw that his visitor was strangely agitated and disturbed. He had taken off his hat, and shining beads of perspiration had gathered and stood clustered upon his forehead. He did not reply to Mainwaring's greeting. He did not, indeed, seem to hear it, but he came directly forward to the table, and stood leaning with one hand upon the open logbook in which the lieutenant had just been writing. Mainwaring had reseated himself at the head of the table, and the tall figure of the skipper stood looking down at him, as from a considerable height. "James Mainwaring," he said, "I promised thee to report if I had news of the pirate. Is he ready now to hear my news?" There was something so strange in his agitation that it began to infect Mainwaring with a feeling somewhat akin to that which appeared to disturb his visitor. "I know not what you mean, sir," he cried, "by asking if I care to hear your news. Moment, I would rather have news of that scoundrel than to have anything I know of in the world. Thou would? Thou would?" Agitation. "Is he in such haste to meet him as all that? Well, very well, then. Suppose I could bring thee face to face with him, what then? Hey? Mainwaring." The thought instantly flashed into Mainwaring's mind that the pirate had returned to the island, that perhaps at that moment he was somewhere near at hand. "I do not understand you, sir," he cried. "Do you mean to tell me that you know where the villain is? If so, lose no time in informing me, for every instant of delay may mean his chance of again escaping." "No danger of that," the other declared, vehemently. "Of that. I'll tell thee where he is, and I'll bring thee to him quick enough." And as he spoke he thumped his fist against the open logbook. In the vehemence of his growing excitement his eyes appeared to shine green in the lanthorn light, and the sweat, that had stood in beads upon his forehead, was now running in streams down his face. One drop hung like a jewel to the tip of his beak-like nose. He came a step nearer to Mainwaring, and bent forward toward him, and there was something so strange and ominous in his bearing that the lieutenant instinctively drew back a little where he sat. Captain Scarfield sent something to you, said Eliezer, almost in a raucous voice, something that you will be surprised to see. And the lapse in his speech from the Quaker he to the plural you struck Mainwaring as singularly strange. As he was speaking, Eliezer was fumbling in a pocket of his long-tailed drab coat, and presently he brought something forth that gleamed in the lanthorn light. The next moment Mainwaring saw leveled directly in his face the round and hollow nozzle of a pistol. There was an instant of dead silence and then, "I am the man you seek," said Eliezer Cooper, in a tense and breathless voice. The whole thing had happened so instantaneously and unexpectedly that for the moment Mainwaring sat like one petrified. Had a thunderbolt fallen from the silent sky and burst at his feet, he could not have been more stunned. He was like one held in the meshes of a horrid nightmare, and he gazed, as through a mist of impossibility, into the lineaments of the well-known, sober face now transformed, as from within into the aspect of a devil. That face, now ashy white, was distorted into a diabolical grin. The teeth glistened in the lamplight. The brows, twisted into a tense and convulsed frown, were drawn down into black shadows, through which the eyes burned a baleful green like the eyes of a wild animal driven to bay. Again he spoke in the same breathless voice. "I am John Scarfield. See a pirate." Again there was a little time of silence, through which Mainwaring heard his watch ticking loudly from where it hung against the bulkhead. Then once more the other began speaking. "You would chase me out of the West Indies, would you? Gee, you! What are you come to now? Own trap, and you'll squeal loud enough before you get out of it. Speak a word or make a movement and I'll blow your brains out against the partition behind you. Listen to what I say, or you are a dead man. Sing out an order instantly for my mate and my boss, to come here to the cabin, and be quick about it, for my finger's on the trigger, and it's only a pull to shut your mouth forever." It was astonishing to Mainwaring, in afterward thinking about it all, how quickly his mind began to recover its steadiness after that first astonishing shock. Even as the other was speaking, he discovered that his brain was becoming clarified to a wonderful lucidity. His thoughts were becoming rearranged, and with a marvelous activity and an alertness he had never before experienced. He knew that, if he moved to escape or uttered any outcry, he would be instantly a dead man, for the circle of the pistol barrel was directed full against his forehead, and with the steadiness of a rock. If he could, but for an instant, divert that fixed and deadly attention, he might still have a chance for life. With the thought, an inspiration burst into his mind, and he instantly put it into execution. Thought, inspiration, and action, as in a flash, were one. He must make the other turn aside his deadly gaze, and instantly he roared out in a voice that stunned his own ears, "Strike, boss'n! Strike, quick!" Taken by surprise, and thinking, doubtless, that another enemy stood behind him, the pirate swung around like a flash with his pistol leveled against the blank boarding. Equally upon the instant he saw the trick that had been played upon him, and in a second flash had turned again. The turn and return had occupied but a moment of time, but that moment, thanks to the readiness of his own invention, had undoubtedly saved Mainwaring's life. As the other turned away his gaze for that brief instant, Mainwaring leaped forward and upon him. There was a flashing flame of fire as the pistol was discharged, and a deafening detonation that seemed to split his brain. For a moment, with reeling senses, he supposed himself to have been shot. The next he knew he had escaped. With the energy of despair he swung his enemy around, and drove him with prodigious violence against the corner of the table. The pirate emitted a grunting cry, and then they fell together, Mainwaring upon the top, and the pistol clattered with them to the floor in their fall. Even as he fell, Mainwaring roared in a voice of thunder, "All hands repel boarders!" And then again, "All hands repel boarders!" Whether hurt by the table edge or not, the fallen pirate struggled, as though possessed of 40 devils, and in a moment or two Mainwaring saw the shine of a long, keen knife that he had drawn from somewhere about his person. The lieutenant caught him by the wrist, but the other's muscles were as though made of steel. They both fought in despairing silence, the one to carry out his frustrated purposes to kill, the other to save his life. Again and again Mainwaring felt that the knife had been thrust against him, piercing once his arm, once his shoulder, and again his neck. He felt the warm blood streaming down his arm and body and looked about him in despair. The pistol lay near upon the deck of the cabin. Still holding the other by the wrist as he could, Mainwaring snatched up the empty weapon and struck once and again at the bald, narrow forehead beneath him. A third blow he delivered with all the force he could command, and then with a violent and convulsive throw the straining muscles beneath him relaxed and grew limp, and the fight was won. Through all the struggle he had been aware of the shouts of voices, of trampling of feet and discharge of firearms, and the thought came to him, even through his own danger, that the Yankee was being assaulted by the pirates. As he felt the struggling form beneath him loosen and dissolve into quietude, he leaped up, and snatching his cutlass, which still lay upon the table, rushed out upon the deck, leaving the stricken form lying twitching upon the floor behind him. It was a fortunate thing that he had set double watches and prepared himself for some attack from the pirates, otherwise the Yankee would certainly have been lost. As it was, the surprise was so overwhelming that the pirates, who had been concealed in the large whaleboat that had come alongside, were not only able to gain a foothold upon the deck, but for a time it seemed as though they would drive the crew of the brig below the hatches. But as Mainwaring, streaming with blood, rushed out upon the deck, the pirates became immediately aware that their own captain must have been overpowered, and in an instant their desperate energy began to evaporate. One or two jumped overboard. One, who seemed to be the mate, fell dead from a pistol shot, and then, in the turn of a hand, there was a rush of a retreat, and a vision of leaping forms in the dusky light of the lanthorns, and a sound of splashing in the water below. The crew of the Yankee continued firing at the phosphorescent wakes of the swimming bodies, but whether with effect it was impossible at the time to tell. The Book of Pirates,